on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Thursday, May 30th, 2024, which means that there's only one day left in this week, one day left in this month, and one month and one day left in the first half of 2024. And what a first half it has been so far. There's been shifting inflation data, shifting economic data, a continued market rally that hit a little bit of a stop today, and we've been here through all of it. And that's because our goal is to help you each and every day become a better and more informed investor. And in order to accomplish that, we bring you some educational items, some actionable material to go over. And of course, most importantly, we hear from you in our voicemails, in our YouTube comments, in our iTunes comments, and hopefully over this next hour in our live calls. With that being said, we'll talk about the market performance and run down the show topics for today right after we tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, I was just calling to see what you guys thought about the stock InterDigital, ticker symbol IDCC, that's India Delta Charlie Charlie. I was just wondering what you guys thought about the business and if y'all liked it, what a good price to pick it up would be. Thank you.
So the question is about IDCC, which is InterDigital Inc. And InterDigital Inc. is an R&D company. They spend a lot of money, I think about 30 to 40% of their revenues every year is spent on R&D in wireless technology. And so primarily their cash, their revenue is derived from creating this technology and then licensing this technology. And when you think about what these patent kings do, there are two things that can provide them revenue. The people that license it to them, or rather the people that are licensing it from them. But also, if people create patents that they say are their own technologies, and then this company goes and wins a lawsuit, they can also get revenue from that as well. And so it's difficult to look at the sales revenue growth figure because of that. I know in particular in 2023, they won a lawsuit against Lenovo, so that boosted their revenue a little bit. That would skew their growth away from what it looked like it was doing historically. But regardless, this is a good company. It's a good business. It's a very well-run business, and that's because they have ingrained themselves in mobile technology and 2G and LTE and 5G. Now they're working on 6G as well. But as always, we need to take a look at how they're trading. They're currently trading at a price-to-earnings forward-looking of 22.5. Their average has been about 29. Their price-to-book is about 4.8, which is fine. That's pretty reasonable. The only issue I have with this company is that cash flow's kind of stagnated a little bit, even with that peak, that little bump up in 2023, probably due to winning a couple lawsuits. Their profitability, as you can see, expanded greatly in 2023. Their net margin went from about 20% to 39%. Now it's coming back down to earth at 25%. You know, I think my big issue with this company is not that it's too crazily overvalued, though it has had some ratings downgrades in the recent past, because it is trading at, again, a relatively high multiple for what it does and for what its growth has become. But it's really that a lot of the patents are focused in an area where maybe consumers aren't necessarily looking to upgrade as much anymore. Are people really going to continue to get the new technology when every year the newest iPhone really just iPhone or Android or whatever you're getting, really just upgrades its camera? There's not a lot in terms of wireless technology until maybe artificial intelligence and large language models are directly incorporated into phones that they could maybe continue to bolster their growth. So I like the company. I like the business. They've done a very good job over the past several years of being an instrumental part in mobile technology. But I think that their growth prospects are a little less than it would appear to be if you just look at the top level fundamental analysis of this company. So where it's trading right now, I don't like it. I like it probably below 100, maybe even closer to 95 range, but certainly keep it on your list. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so. So here is some of what we have for you, time permitting. My main focus point concerns this story. Investor behavior continues to hinder returns. In 2023, emotional decisions hurt returns, and the average equity fund investor underperformed the market. We'll talk about investor behavior, equity fund advisors, and general financial advice. We'll also be talking a little bit about tariffs. You all have heard about tariffs. They was a little bit of a resurgence during the Trump administration. The Biden administration kept them going, in particular against China. And now both sides are talking about expanding tariffs. So what are tariffs? What are the effect of tariffs? And who really pays the price of tariffs? We'll also talk a little bit about the stock market and how the rally it's riding is a little bit questionable. And that's because market breadth, although it appeared to be widening at the beginning of the year, is still pretty shallow. Couple stocks have been leading this rally. A couple stocks are responsible for most of the gains in terms of market value this year. So we'll talk about that. And also, should we have time at the end of the show, I'll try once again to touch on the IMF's upgrade of China's GDP growth forecasts. We also have some voicemails ready to play, one on PRT, Perm Rock Royalty Trust, and one on UFPI, UFP Industries, Inc. We'll also have some questions that came in from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show at 888-99-CHART. Now, it looks like we're headed into a short break. I welcome your finance and investment questions now. No question is too simple. No question is too complex. You set the agenda. So help guide us through this next hour. Call now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Well, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk, with more than 58 million downloads. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Before we get to more questions, let's talk about the market performance today. Looks like the Dow was down 86 basis points. The S&P 500 following suit down 60 basis points. NASDAQ down about 1%, almost 110 basis points. And the Russell 2000 small caps, opposite trend, up about 1% today. And so that was finishing mostly lower, as it appears, off of worse levels, though. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are now on track for weekly declines following five straight weeks of gains. Big tech was largely lower. NVIDIA, hit by afternoon headlines about the U.S. delaying AI chip sales to the Middle East, saw a little hit to their market value today. Software, Salesforce notably, was another drag on the market. Other lagging names included some life sciences names, department stores, and dollar stores. Outperformers included small caps, REITs, autos, home builders, banks, insurers. The dollar looked a little weaker on most major crosses today. Gold finished up 10 basis points. Bitcoin was down 2.2%. And crude oil settled off 1.7% from the day before. And overall, despite the weak index finish, which really was the worst NASDAQ session of the month, market breadth was positive. The equal weight S&P outperformed today, which is good. We'll talk a little bit about market breadth, as I mentioned later on. Also, some positive consumer takes from today's reports. Nevertheless, there was still a notable drag from big tech after overnight earnings raised some concerns surrounding software space, where macro headwinds and some crowding out from AI have driven elongated deal cycles and heightened budget scrutiny, as well as fundraising going forward. AI also under some scrutiny today amid those latest headlines that I mentioned about export restrictions. Let's see, some other economic news. Q1 GDP was revised down to 1.3% from 1.6% earlier. primarily because of some downward revisions to consumer spending. And overall, though, I'd say it was a pretty light day. All eyes will be tomorrow on the April PCE inflation number as we round out not only this week, but the month of May. Now, from time to time, we receive InvestTalk questions from our YouTube comment section, and we like to get to those as soon as possible. So here's one that came in earlier on VRT. I wanted to know what you guys thought of ticker VRT, Vertiv Holdings, which I do believe was part of our InvestTalk Market Madness. It has gone up in price in the last year and wanted to see if it was a good play in the digital infrastructure segment for the future. So let's pull up VRT over here on FactSet for those of you watching at home. And VRT engages in the design, manufacture, and service of critical data infrastructure. And what that means, in layman's terms, is they work on both power systems, but also cooling systems for data centers. And so when you think about artificial intelligence and data centers and cloud storage and all of these things, it is very energy intensive, and a byproduct of energy is heat. So as the data centers, artificial intelligence, all this boon over the past year has happened, there has been not only a demand for energy, but a demand for systems that allow those data centers to operate efficiently and cool. So Vertiv has seen over the past 52 weeks a 400% return. 400% return. Let's dig in a little bit to their fundamentals. Let's pull something up on my other screen. So it looks like sales growth has been pretty steady, about $4.3 billion in 2020, $4.9 in 2021, all the way up to $6.8 billion last year, projected to get $7.6 billion in terms of revenue this year. Their margins, improving. They were not making money in 2020, and then all the way up from 2.4% in 2021 to 8% last year, and 11% is what it's projected to make this year. Their cash flow, pretty impressive over the past year. Pretty significant growth and moved from negative into positive cash flow as their profitability, as I mentioned, has been increasing. In terms of debt, they got about $3 billion in debt on a $38 billion market cap company. Their earnings projections have been upgraded, and they've issued a decent amount of shares in the past 5 years. Their dividend they're paying right now is pretty minimal, about, what, 2 basis points at this point? Yeah, it looks like it's a rounding error to zero at this point. So no dividend to speak of at the moment. So we talk about this a lot. Good companies is not what it's all about. This company has certainly ridden the AI wave, but it's currently priced at a price to earnings of 37. Their five-year average is 18. Price to book is at 27.7. Their five-year average is 8.4. This is a company that is currently priced in a way that if demand for data centers and chips falls off, it's going to fall off pretty substantially. And that's because although revenue growth has looked good, if demand slows, so will their revenue. And so at this valuation right here, I would say no. This is too expensive for pretty much any company for my taste, and not because there's no chance that it continues to climb higher. It certainly could. But again, this is about more than just return. It's about risk and return. And there's not much wiggle room going forward for this company to fall below consensus expectations. Thanks for watching. And if you would like to get your comment or your question answered, feel free to go over to our YouTube channel and watch our episodes of Invest Talk Daily and leave a question. We like to get to those as soon as they come in. Now, the more caller questions we fit in the podcast, the better your learning experience will be. So let's play another question from our InvestTalk voice bank, this one on preferred stocks.
Hi, Dave from Ohio. My question is about preferred stocks. If you could shine a little bit of light on them, I'm trying to produce like an income stream, if it's a good idea, or just your general thoughts. I'll be looking forward to your answer. Thank you.
Yeah, so preferred stocks are similar to bonds in that they typically pay fixed dividends. They have priority over common stocks within the capital structure of liquidation of a business. And they have, because of that, limited upward mobility in terms of price appreciation and also limited voting rights. So historically, people tend to invest in preferred stocks not for their ability to be a voting equity investor, but rather for a more certain revenue stream. But given where we are in terms of the higher interest rate environment, we think interest rates actually, although they may be cut in the short term or in the long term, going to be higher. The trade-off for owning preferred stocks versus the risk of what you get for them being still a equity security doesn't seem to make sense in a non-zero interest rate environment. So, you know, in short of it, they tend to be a more complicated instrument than just owning a bond where you have a secure revenue stream as well and higher priority in terms of dissolution of the company. So, but that's just a little high level. Obviously, there's more going into it, but either way, that's a quick summary of preferred stocks. Now we're headed into a short break, and we're happy to play your recorded voice bank questions, but we love taking live calls from you. So in case you forgot, our phone number is 888-99-CHART.
The next InvestTalk Wealth webinar is coming up soon. Tuesday, June 11th, join Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero as they explore the aspects of quality investing. It's all happening online. Register now at investtalk.com.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this question. Investor behavior continues to hinder returns. In 2023, emotional decisions hurt returns, and the average equity fund investor underperformed the market. So let's talk a little bit about investor behavior and some overall financial advice moving forward. And this topic comes about because the 30th annual Dalbar Quantitative Analysis of Investor Behavior Report, it's a mouthful, a leading study on investor behavior, which was initiated in 1994, has recently been released. And this report covers investment behaviors from 1985 through last year, 2023. And in doing so, it seeks to evaluate how psychological factors, along with market dynamics, have influenced investment returns, particularly highlighting the contrast between a strong market, like we saw last year, and a challenging one, which we saw the year prior in 2022. So what are the key findings of this report? Well, for one, it found that there was a general underperformance of average equity fund investors. In 2023, the average equity fund investor earned 5.5% less than the S&P 500, making that the third largest gap in the last decade. How did fixed income investors fare? Well, not too well. The performance of average fixed income investors trailed the Bloomberg Barclays Index by 2.63%, which is pretty significant in the bond world. And so what caused this? Well, one thing that this can be attributed to is the impact of emotional decisions. The report made a point to underscore that emotional decision-making, particularly selling during market downturns, significantly hampers returns. Now, we talk about this all the time. If your horizon is long enough, the best decision you can make is to stay in the market. Again, there was a wealth webinar, I talked about it yesterday, where we showed historical drawdowns in market stress scenarios, and the one thing in common was that the market always returned. And so for people that don't have to draw down their investments when there's market stress, the best thing for you to do is to not do anything at all. The best trade sometimes is, in fact, no trade. So this highlights the critical need, in my opinion, for maintaining a long-term investment strategy. Another interesting takeaway was that there was actually an increase in the duration for which average equity fund investors held onto their investments in 2023 compared to the previous years. Now, looking at 2022, the performance by the average equity fund investor was notably poor, with a loss of 21.17%, underperforming the S&P 500, which also experienced a downturn, though slightly less at 18.11%. So in spite of this willingness to hold longer, 2023 saw a widening of the performance gap, with average equity fund investors achieving a return of just 20.79% versus the S&P 500's 26.29%. Now, most of that can be attributed to something we'll talk a little bit about later, the general concentration of the market. But what does this really tell us as a whole? Well, the best investor is an unemotional one. You need to ground your philosophy in fundamentals and not be shaken out by temporary market stress. Secondly, don't think about investing in yearly returns, but rather the whole sum of long-term returns. As Justin likes to say, time in the market historically is better than trying to time the market. Now let's shift gears and see if we can answer another caller question now.
Hello, Justin, Luke. My question today is about PermRock Royalty Trust, symbol PRT. I was looking at this as a value play since I have some pretty good PE, PB, interesting financials. It's a little bit all over the place, but when I dug in a little deeper, I saw an 11% dividend yield, which is a red flag to me, and I realized that I don't know anything about how this works. It looks more like a investment vehicle as opposed to something that I would want to like buy and hold. I'm curious if you can expand a little bit on what this business model looks like. It's PRT. Thank you.
Yeah, so PRT, the PermRock Royalty Trust, essentially they make investments in the acquisition, development, and operation of oil and natural gas properties, and they get royalties from these properties. And so a lot of people like this type of structure because if they are operated well, they can pay a pretty good consistent dividend. Is this one of those companies is the question. The answer, this dividend's all over the place. In 2018, it was 1.2 per share, then 0.72, then 0.15, then 0.60, then 1, then 0.51. Run. You are correct. 11.1% dividend yield is a red flag. This thing is down 15% on the week. Its relative strength, or rather on the year, its relative strength relative to the S&P 500 over the past 5 years is horrendous. And so when you see a dividend yield of 11%, run. Run away. PRT, PermRock Royalty Trust, thumbs down. Now, Justin and I are thankful for your podcast support, and our free downloads will continue. But I want to make sure you're aware that two other ways you can find this material and unbiased guidance. InvestTalk has a YouTube channel and an Instagram following. We're building out more content on both platforms, so go to YouTube or Instagram and search InvestTalk. Remember, use two T's, and please tell your friends that our podcast, our videos, and our Instagram is free of charge. The InvestTalk phone lines are open, so call now at 888-99-CHART.
1. When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, GDPR, and more, saving you time and money. With Vanta, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and prove security in real time. Claim 10% off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for 10% off Vanta.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Jeff in the beautiful state of Alabama, who has a question about Best Buy. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Yes, sir. I have slowly built a 4% position in Best Buy with a average of around $74.
Okay.
Big run today, 13% today. So like to get your analysis on that.
Yeah, of course. So the reason why there's a big run is people were making some bets ahead of earnings, and they actually ended up beating by about 11%. There's an 11% positive surprise on earnings. And so, you know, Best Buy to me is one of these companies that people may think in the short term there are some issues just because there's some consumer spending concerns about depleted savings. And certainly they did have revenue peak out in 2022 because people had a lot of pandemic savings that they wanted to spend on their homes and spend on themselves, and that makes sense. And, you know, this is a kind of a trend. Best Buy has been beating earnings estimates which is pretty good, especially on the EPS top line number. And that was even in the wake of earnings downgrades going into this most recent quarter. But if you look at them fundamentally, their debt looks pretty good, $3.9 billion on a $15 billion market cap. And over the past 5 years, they've been buying back a lot of shares. So I think if you're a long-term investor, now at a relative valuation of about 11 in terms of price to earnings and 5 in price to book, pretty good time to buy Best Buy. Pretty good time to pick it up. We actually own it for clients ourselves, so we do give a thumbs up on Best Buy.
Okay. Hey, well, let Steve know we're thinking about him still, and we remember him in our prayers every time.
Definitely will. Thank you for the call. Now let's get back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
This is Alan from Hayward. When I'm researching companies on websites like Morningstar, FinBiz, Yahoo Finance, Mergent Online, they all have different information for many of the company's ratios. For example, the return on assets ratio is different on all four of those websites for the same company. I tested it with multiple companies, and not only were they all off, sometimes the ratios were significantly different. How do I know which website to trust? Clearly, at least three of them are wrong, or maybe all four. I'm using the free version of all four of these websites. Could that be the reason why they're giving me inaccurate information? Thanks again. Love the show.
So the question is, you're getting different results on different websites for essentially the same number. And that's something I've seen as well. Now, of what you mentioned, I would probably trust Morningstar the most. The reason being that Morningstar is a product for institutions that also has a free version, that also has a version that retail uses. Traditionally, people who work within the finance space don't tend to use Yahoo Finance, but it is a problem. It is certainly a problem. The only way to know for sure what is the accurate number might be to dive into annual filings that are available on SEC EDGAR. But, you know, I think that when you err on the side of the tools that are typically used by the industry, like Morningstar is, and of course they use Morningstar Direct in the industry, but still you have access to Morningstar data within the free version, I would err on the side of, again, those websites that also have a version of their product that is traditionally used within the industry. Thanks for the call. Now let's shift gears and talk a little bit about an exciting topic if you're a trade nerd, and that is tariffs. And so since Donald Trump initiated a new round of trade wars with China in 2018, the debate over tariffs has intensified. Critics label tariffs as taxes that disproportionately affect lower income families, a concern that persists even under President Joe Biden, who has maintained and in some ways expanded those tariffs. And with both candidates promising more tariffs if reelected, studies are underscoring that these duties are, in a lot of ways, regressive, falling heavily on those who spend a larger portion of their income on imported goods. Now, the purpose of tariffs is said to be, particularly those against China, to extend beyond fiscal aims to strategic economic realignment, to protect American industry. Now, according to Dartmouth College economist Douglas Irwin in his new book, Clashing Over Commerce, A History of U.S. Trade Policy, U.S. tariff policy has evolved through phases of revenue restriction and reciprocity since the 1700s. But today's tariffs aim to reduce U.S. dependency on Chinese products and diversify trade to mitigate security risks. And this shift represents a move from traditional tariff goals towards addressing broader economic and security strategies. It's not just about protecting manufacturing. It's about national security. You don't want to be as dependent on another country who could choke off your supply of goods or, in this case, flood the U.S. market with cheaper goods that put U.S. businesses out of business. And so despite their strategic intent, it's important to understand the impact of tariffs on consumer prices and market dynamics because it's pretty significant, especially in a time where you're trying to control inflation. Current tariffs are not only about protecting industries or negotiating better trade terms, but are also measures to prompt a reduction in reliance on Chinese goods for all the reasons that I've already mentioned. And so the debate extends to being, you know, important because now there's a potential escalation of tariffs, which predictions that they could increase significantly if either administration, even perhaps reaching the levels of the Smoot-Hawley tariff era, which was known to have exacerbated the Great Depression. And so analysts from Evercore warned that such increases could sharply reduce the purchasing power for the poorest 20% of U.S. households by about 4.2%, compared to just 0.9% for the top 1% of households. Keeping all this in mind, it's important to note that over the past decade, both political parties have been equally supportive of protectionist policy in the form of tariffs. But next time someone tries to tell you that tariffs protect American industry, think about who's likely to pay the price for supporting that protection. Now, I want to remind you that KPP Financial is presenting a new InvestTalk Wealth webinar hosted by Justin Klein and myself. The official webinar title is Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. At this new free InvestTalk Wealth webinar, you will gain valuable investing insight. You'll even be able to participate in an interactive Q&A session to obtain personalized financial advice. It all happens online Tuesday, June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific. So go to investtalk.com now to register for our upcoming wealth webinar. It's free to attend, but you must pre-register. So go check it out if that interests you. And now, as always, my phone lines are open. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
Everyone's situation is different.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan.
And so are their questions.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
Each podcast is unique, and you set the agenda.
I'm wondering if now...
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Good afternoon, InvestTalk. This is Mike from Texas. I'm calling in regards to UFP Industries, ticker UFPI. They appear to have minimal long-term debt. They have a return on equity averaging about 15%, return on assets about 10%, return on invested capital about 12%, a very low price to sales, a good price to book value. I read the past couple of earning call transcripts, and they're expecting a down year this year in 2024, and then they projecting that they're going to pick back up in 2025 and 2026. So it's expected that the earnings and the revenue will dip here in 2024, and so I anticipate waiting a little bit before starting a position. I was just kind of curious on your overall thoughts for UFPI, its outlook, and possibly maybe a range to begin a position with the company. I'd appreciate any insight that you might have and appreciate everything that you guys do for us listeners, and keep up the great work.
Well, that's a good summary to start with. But UFPI, which is UFP Industries, engages in the supply of primarily manufactured wood and non-wood composite materials within construction markets, retail, and packaging. And as the caller mentioned, their growth looks pretty good, about 10% year over year. We'll get into that a little bit later. Their margins, not too shabby. Pretty consistent within the 6-7 range. It was 6.8% last year. Their net margin is supposed to be 6.9% next year. Their cash flow over the past 3 years has been pretty steadily improving. But their profitability in other ways has kind of narrowed a little bit in the past year and a half. So my issue with this company, which is, albeit up 45% in the past 52 weeks, is that even though its valuations are pretty reasonable, I think that the market that it operates in is not as ripe for growth as this number right here, this 10% annualized year-over-year growth of the past 5 years suggests. And that's because this company has gotten a significant boost, not just from input costs and price spikes, but also acquisitions. And so even though there has been some good organic growth over the past couple years, given the nature of the business and the product line that it's in, the subsector that it's in, the reason why their cash flow is improving so much is because of acquiring. So you have to look into why this revenue growth is what it is. Don't just take that top line 10% and say, oh, this company has fantastic growth that it'll be able to project out going forward. So, you know, I think that there may be a little downward movement in this company. Its relative strength is very high right now. I would probably pick it up if it drops down below closer to 100, which certainly, again, given the growth dynamics of this sub-industry and its need essentially to continue to acquire in order to continue to build upon that growth, I think it'll probably be retesting those levels at some point in the short to medium term. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk now with more than 58 million downloads. Let's go ahead and play another listener question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Kevin calling from Southern California. During your March Madness, I had bought CNM Core and Main stock, and I used a covered call that I let the shares get called away at 60. Now it's come back down to around 57 currently. I'm wondering if it's a good stock to buy into again and hold for the long term. I made a decent profit earlier this year on it, and it was a strong company at that time, and wondering if you see it as a good buy currently. I appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
So Core & Main, for those who remember InvestTalk Market Madness, is a water products company, storage, wastewater, storm drainage, fire protection products, sprinklers. And it was the dark horse candidate that just kept powering through InvestTalk Market Madness. And that's because its revenue growth has been pretty significant, 15.9% year over year over the past 5 years. Its net margin, pretty solid for this sub-industry, 5.5 in 2023, 5.5 in 2024, and it's set to increase to about 6.6 this year, according to estimates. Its return on assets, around 7.4 last year as well. And the real king of this is significant improvements in cash flow over the past year and a half, going back to about the middle of 2022. Now, even with the significant run-up of 111% over the past 52 weeks, this is a very well-run business. It has a little bit of debt, $2 billion on a $10 billion market cap, but its interest coverage ratio is about 15. And so it has issued some shares in its run-up, which any company that sees its price appreciate and needs to raise capital, that's a good time to do it. But its earnings per share is projected to increase over the next 2 years. Certainly, it's on the right track. It is a powerhouse. It is very strong. But up that much, it may be ripe for a little bit of a pullback. It's currently trading at a 22 times price to earnings. I'd maybe wait till it comes down to about 18 to 20, or at least below 20, closer to its five-year average of 17.7. Either way, very well-run business. We like Core & Main. I liked it during the InvestTalk Market Madness. I was rooting for it week after week, and certainly it's good to see it continue to power higher, up 42% year-to-date. Let's see if we can fit in another caller question before we head into the break.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is James from New York. I have a question about Centene Corp, ticker symbol CNC. It has been dropping a lot the past couple of days, and it has reached my buy point. But I'm wondering what you guys think about the company. It seems to have gotten hit with all the other healthcare stocks, and I'm wondering, is this a good time to enter or just keep it on my watch list for now? Thank you, and have a great day.
So CNC, as I pull up something on another screen as well, CNC is Centene Corp, and it is a healthcare enterprises managed healthcare company. Primarily, it operates within government-sponsored healthcare programs. Medicaid accounts for about 68% of its revenues. It's down 7% year-to-date, though still up about 11% over the past year. And so the big problem with this one, as opposed to some other insurers, some other managed care, is that a lot of its revenue is derived from the subgroup of people that are going to be using more and more healthcare and will continue to balloon. You saw a lot of healthcare companies post earnings, prices fall as a result of elder care and increases in people using their insurance. So I think if you're trying to target a healthcare company that has been certainly had their stock price depressed within the past couple months as a result of unexpected usage, I would probably focus more on a company that doesn't have so much of its revenue derived. Oh, I'm sorry, Medicaid, not Medicare. I apologize for that. So regardless, 60% of it is from Medicaid. I think that I was confusing that with Medicare. Medicaid, of course, is for the people who are underneath the poverty line rather than Medicare, which is for elder people. So keeping that in mind, I still think that right now we're in a position where there tends to be more usage of healthcare in the wake of the pandemic and an aging population than there has been historically. So I still think there still has some room to run downward. It is down 2% today. I would keep it on my watch list as well as other health insurance companies. This one doesn't have as much exposure to elder individuals. So given that, I would keep this on my watch list as well. Now we're moving into short break, and I'm here now and taking your calls live. So give us a call before we head off on this beautiful Thursday. You know the phone number. It's 888-99-CHART.
The next InvestTalk Wealth webinar is coming up soon. Tuesday, June 11th. It's all happening online, and it's free. Register now at InvestTalk.com.
Hello, InvestTalk. Today I'm calling about MacroGenetics, MGNX. This is a biotech that works on cancer solutions, cancer medicines, and so on. It recently had a horrendous drop down because of the news of that. Unfortunately, there were a couple of patients that died. They were taking the medicine, and this plummeted the price from 15 and something to almost to 3.35 per share. And I see that on the chart, this is something that has been happening consistently through the years. I would like to know, is there something that you see on your systems in the financial side? Basically, I want to jump on it on the way up and tell me what you think. Thank you so much.
Like many biopharmaceutical companies, especially ones that are trying to find treatments for cancer, I wish them the best in terms of achieving their goal, but I'm not going to invest in them because interest rates are higher, because money isn't free, and because for 99.999% of these, they will burn through cash until they go bankrupt. And so for those of you who are watching at home, you can see this chart over the past 5 years, this steady drop-off time and time again. And so the most likely outcome here is this company will continue to burn through cash. They've never been profitable. They've never made money. It'll burn, burn, burn until eventually it goes bankrupt. Again, I wish it the best, but just because I want something to happen, just because I want something like cancer, which is a terrible disease, to get better treatments, doesn't mean I allocate money in my portfolio for my future, for my financial goals behind that. So I would pass. It's another one of those biopharma companies that seems unlikely to achieve its goals. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off into the night, I guess, because today's only Thursday. I'm used to hosting the show on Fridays, but I'm here on this Thursday. I want to talk a little bit about this rally that it seemed as though at the beginning of the year, it was going to be broader. Yet, that hasn't been the case. This month, as market indices reached new records, just four major technology stocks, NVIDIA, Microsoft, Apple, and Alphabet, Google's parent, have collectively added over $1.4 trillion in market value, overshadowing gains across the rest of the S&P 500. And so this surge has been driven primarily by NVIDIA, which alone accounted for half of this increase. The growth in these tech giants is fueled by two major trends: one, artificial intelligence, and persistently high interest rates. NVIDIA in particular has benefited tremendously from the AI boom following the release of ChatGPT by OpenAI in late 2022, leading to a surge in demand for its microchips. However, the enthusiasm for AI and its impact on stock valuations brings to light potential risks of overvaluation. While NVIDIA's profits have risen sharply, mirroring its stock price, concerns linger that this may not be sustainable. However, it's important to note that unlike the speculative tech bubble of the 2000s, today's potential overvaluation is tied to actual demand and actual products, specifically these AI chips. So let's take a look at the risks NVIDIA's booming share prices include. First and foremost, overhyped AI expectations. High expectations around AI transforming the economy may not materialize as anticipated or as quickly as some would hope. The practical applications of AI, like customer service chatbots, have certainly not revolutionized user experience or productivity as hoped for. Secondarily, price competition. NVIDIA faces stiff competition from other tech giant startups in the AI space, which could force its prices lower, trim its margins, and lower its revenue. Another is supplier costs. NVIDIA's dependency on Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company for chip production could become a financial strain if TSMC decides to increase its prices. And lastly, the scale question. There's an assumption that bigger AI models that require more chips and gather more data are better. This proves incorrect. And if smaller, more bespoke models are equally effective, much of the current investment in large AI infrastructure could be wasted. It's important to keep in mind that a large share of their revenue comes from just over four companies. And so investors and market watchers need to be careful. I'm not saying that these stocks can't continue to go up. They certainly may. But as I always say, it's not just about return. It's also about risk. So knowing the risks is incredibly important. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And please be sure to review and rate us on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.